On the Record
on News Talk,
brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. It all adds up to the new equation.
If you look across the water, there is one dominant theme in today's Sunday papers in Britain, and that of course is the murder on Friday of the Conservative MP for Southend-on-Sea, Sir David Amos, an MP for 40 years and the second MP to be killed at a constituency surgery in just over 5 years. That of course following the death of Joe Cox at a surgery in 2016. We're joined on the line by Conor McGinn, who's originally from County Armagh, but he's now an MP for the Labour Party for St Helens, which is just outside Liverpool. Conor, thanks for joining us this lunchtime. You might first of all start by telling us how well you knew David Amos.
Sir David Amos was well known by most people in and around the House of Commons and Parliament as a whole, and not just MPs or Lords, the people that one might describe as at the top of the tree, but actually by the doormen, by the catering staff. He had a very sunny and warm disposition. I knew him personally. He and I had worked together. He was one of the first supporters of a campaign that I led for my constituent, Mary McCourt, whose daughter was murdered and her body never recovered. And we wanted to ensure that the perpetrators of such crimes weren't eligible for parole. And David did a great deal to get support from that across the House, and we won the change to the law. Secondly, he was the chair of the all-party group on the Holy See. He was a very strong and devout Catholic, but a very inclusive one too. And so he and I frequently would have seen each other at Mass in the House of Commons, knew through our chaplain, Father Pat Brown, who's originally from County Meath. We had a strong relationship. And in many respects, he was the linchpin of what was quite, as you can imagine, a diverse and occasionally disparate group of Catholic MPs from across the whole of Parliament.
I'm sure. Is it unusual for there to be that level of kind of cross-party engagement? Because I'm sure it's not always quite as rough and tumble behind the scenes as it is, as played out in the public arena. But would it be unusual for there to be such magnanimity across the island in working together in causes like that?
Look, I think a lot of the relationships across Parliament are transactional, and that there are cross-party campaigns where you work with people around a shared interest, a shared idea and a shared goal. I think the difference with David was it was done with such generosity and inclusivity. There was a sense that he was someone who got on with people, and I think that's borne out by the tributes you've seen from his own constituents. He was just a good egg. He was just a nice fella. He was very respectful of others. And, you know, he was one who adopted the approach that it's best to try and work with people and share what you have in common rather than start from a point of confrontation or contention. And I think that's why you're saying that so many colleagues are so devastated and heartbroken that it could happen to someone like David, who wasn't high profile, who didn't have a national political job, or who wasn't on the media all the time, who was just a very good local constituency MP and just a nice fella who'd been in there for nearly 40 years, you know, married with grown-up kids, one of whom was married. He was looking forward to another's wedding in the coming months, and it's just tragic and sad. And, you know, I think that's the overwhelming sense that people have this weekend.
What was your first thought when you heard that he'd been attacked on Friday afternoon?
Well, firstly, that he was all right. I mean, I was with him on Tuesday. He led a parliamentary delegation to Qatar. He had a great interest in the Middle East, and our visits overlapped. I was there in my role as Shadow Minister for Security, but I had the chance to speak to him on Tuesday. And it was always great amusement to him that I had never been to Rome. So he always said that meant I wasn't in full communion with the church. And on Tuesday, he ribbed me about it again. And we had spoke about actually a visit next year. But, you know, the first thought inevitably is with him and his family. But then, and I hope this doesn't sound selfish, but then it was for my family and my two children and my wife, and, you know, the thought very quickly that it could have been any of us. And then, you know, it very quickly transpired, and we found that he wasn't going to be all right. And I think just then the magnitude of what happened, really, and the shock. Because Friday is a really busy day for MPs. We're not in Westminster. We're all out and about in our various constituencies. So there was just a sort of real sense of shock, I think, and you know, people being devastated about David and for his family, but also there was a sense of, well, what does this mean now for everyone else?
You said that you hope it didn't come across as being selfish. Now, I'm sure it didn't, because again, there would have been hundreds of MPs up and down Britain and in Northern Ireland holding constituency surgeries on a Friday. And unfortunately, this isn't the first time in the last couple of years where an MP has paid the ultimate price for engaging with their constituents at a clinic like this. Since the death of Joe Cox 5 years ago, have you felt at any time under any kind of threat or danger when you've been holding your clinics in St. Helens, or have you had to undertake any kind of extra measures to ensure your own safety?
Well, look, I think the first thing to say is that the MPs' points of interaction with the public are not just through surgeries. Clearly, they're structured and the time is public, and the availability of people to come and, or the ability of people to come and see it in that structured setting of an advice surgery is there. But I mean, I see people in my community all the time because I live in it. You know, my kids go to school here. Our weekend revolves around, you know, sport and socializing and seeing friends and being out and about. So, you know, just enhancing security measures at advice clinics won't essentially solve this, because MPs who live and who are out and about in their community are here when they're not in Westminster. Look, I think the truth is the last Parliament was a horrible one. I think after Joe died, we had hoped that some of the toxicity we'd seen during the referendum debate would go away and would lead to, you know, a more gentle or at least respectful politics. And I mean, that just didn't happen, you know, so that really divided, hung Parliament post-election. The problems we had in my own party with Corbyn nights and, you know, the sort of divisions we had between ourselves, it just led to a really difficult 3 or 4 years. And there wasn't a week went by when we didn't have some sort of abuse coming into the office over the phone or via email. And several times threats that had to be raised with the police that were credible and had to be resolved. So, you know, it hasn't been an easy four or five years. And the fact that, you know, since I became an MP just 6 years ago, two of my colleagues have been murdered, two who are known personally to me, I think is quite a sobering thing to think about the profession that you do, frankly.
Oh, I hope this isn't a leading question, but on that note, does it give you cause to wonder whether public life is a safe place for anyone if those are the sorts of risks that MPs run now?
I think the truth is it gives my family cause to think that. You know, there are other things that you could do. But for me, you know, I have a vocation. You know, this is the life and the job that I want to. I know it sounds, you know, very cliched, but to try and help people and get things done and change the country and still retain a little bit of that youthful idealism where you want to change the world and make it better. And look, of course, I'm not reckless about any of this. You know, I'll think about how I go about my business as an MP, you know, being safe, making sure my staff in the constituency office and in Westminster are safe and are comfortable too, because it's important that we don't forget them, because they are the front line in this in terms of dealing with some of the abuse that we get. You know, but ultimately, I would also say, you know, it's a great job and I love it. And you know, even this morning when I was out and about, you know, people feeling that they can speak to you, obviously sympathising about David's death, but also just that sense that we have, I think, here and in Ireland, actually, that politicians are approachable and that you can talk to them and you can raise issue with them. I would never, ever want us to lose that and be in some sort of a bubble like they are in other countries.
Sure, because I know it's a very cherished thing, and it's definitely the case over here in the Republic, at least anyway, that people do really cherish the idea that you can just see your politician and you can have an engagement with them. And sometimes it's not always friendly, when sometimes it might not be too polite, but at least it can be reserved or it can be constructive, and it never has to feel like anyone is being intimidated. Do you have any fears that that sort of culture might inevitably come to an end, or what do you think could be done to ensure that we manage to retain that kind of atmosphere in this part of the world?
Well, I think politicians just have to be resolute on this. And look, I think you're right. I mean, having had some experience and being very friendly and knowing quite a few Irish politicians, the model that I use here is very similar to that. Now, I don't have to go to as many funerals maybe as some Irish politicians, and it's not the sort of small geographic area based the way a multi-member seat is.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel it's really important to be out in the community. The truth is the pandemic had changed things a little bit. You know, we'd moved to online meetings, to having online surgeries. We will retain some of that, I think. But I think that face-to-face contact, and as I say, not just through advice surgeries, you know, we may amend that to have them done by appointments rather than drop-in, which I think is entirely reasonable. It's something that I do anyway, frankly. But also, I would never want to lose that ability that you have as an MP to, you know, go and watch here in St. Helens, you know, a local rugby league game, yeah, to pop out for a pint, to take the kids to the park. You know, we have to be able to live our lives. And my view has always been, if you're a good public representative and a good member of parliament, living your life in your community will mean that you're among the people, you know what the people think, and it makes you a much better public servant, and I would never want to lose that.
Final question then for you, Conor, on that general role. There might be some people who have always thought about getting into public life, and they might have been maybe turned against it for one reason or another, maybe the inhospitable hours or the physical demands on it, the family pressures that there might be, and now they have this extra question of their own security and the security of their family and staff as well. Would you have any words of consolation or any words of encouragement for people who might be on the fence about whether that's a leap they want to take?
I think people who have a vocation to enter public life should pursue it, and they shouldn't be put off by naysayers among their peers or concerns about some of what we've seen over the last number of years. You have to be thick-skinned in this game, I think, but not so much so that you lose your humanity and your compassion and your decency. I mean, the one thing I think that frustrates me as a politician that and has been difficult to deal with is when people attack you or ascribe views to you without knowing you and knowing that behind you is a family and friends and a life and views, and that can be difficult. But ultimately, as David Amos himself said, and I think this is right, it is the greatest privilege to be able to do this job as a Member of Parliament, to represent 100,000 people in the community in which I live here in St. Helens, in the House of Commons, and to speak up for them, to get things done for them. And it is a noble pursuit, politics, and I think anyone thinking of going into it should do it, because we could definitely do with raising the calibre of politicians on both sides of the Irish Sea.
Okay, we will leave it there. Conor McGinn, Labour Party MP, Labour Party MP for St Helens North, just outside Liverpool, but originally from County Armagh. Thanks very much for joining us this lunchtime on the Record.